that it? Got anything else you want to hang on to me, man? Because I got something I want to hang on to you, Jimmy Dick. Hello, and welcome to Learning College Vanguard Audiobooks. 105.7 The Wave. Coming at you with 50,000 watts of power from the sub-sub-basement of a skyscraper near you. All right, today we're going to do some real evergreen material. Chapter 10 of The Unabridged, The International Jew, a production of Henry Ford and his team of crack researchers, as goes the cliche, at the Dearborn Independent, published 95 years ago, back in 1920. But stuff that remains eternally true, hence evergreen, as concerns the Jews and his plans. Let's get right to it. There's 80 chapters, there's 4 volumes. This is chapter 10 of volume 1, so we're about, what would that be in mathematical terms? 10 out of 80. About 1/8 of the way through after today. And the rest of it is all, and everything that we record can be found at vnnforum.com. So this chapter is about the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. The title of the chapter, and there's no epigraph in this one, is An Introduction to the Jewish Protocols. Jewish protocols being in quotes. The documents most frequently mentioned by those who are interested in the theory of Jewish world power, rather than in the actual operation of that power in the world today, are those 24 documents known as the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. The protocols have attracted much attention in Europe, having become the center of an important storm of opinion in England only recently, but discussion of them in the United States has been limited. These are the documents concerning which the Department of Justice was making inquiries more than a year ago, and which were given publication in London by Eyre and Spottiswoode, E-Y-R-E, and Spottiswoode, W-O-O-D-E, the official printers to the British government. Who it was that first entitled these documents with the name of the Elders of Zion is not known. It would be possible, without serious mutilation of the documents, to remove all hint of Jewish authorship and yet retain all the main points of the most comprehensive program for world subjugation that has ever come to public knowledge. And that's a quote worth repeating and remembering. The most comprehensive program for world subjugation that has ever come to public knowledge. Comprehensive program for world subjugation. Comprehensive program for world subjugation. Yet it must be said that thus to eliminate all hint of Jewish authorship would be to bring out a number of contradictions which do not exist in the protocols in their present form. The purpose of the plan revealed in the protocols is to undermine all authority in order that a new authority in the form of an autocracy may be set up. The point of them is to undermine all authority in order to establish a new authority, which would be a dictatorship, or what they're calling an autocracy. Such a plan could not emanate from a ruling class which already possessed authority, although it might emanate from anarchists, and anarchists were a big concern in the opening decades of the 1900s, as they were blowing things up and instigating labor revolutions. But anarchists do not avow autocracy as the ultimate condition they seek. The authors might be conceived as a company of French subversives, such as existed at the time of the French Revolution, and had the infamous Duke d'Orléans as their leader, D'Orléans, but this would involve a contradiction between the fact that those subversives have passed away and the fact that the program announced in these protocols is being steadily carried out, not only in France, but throughout Europe, and very noticeably in the United States. So Henry Ford's point was always that, regardless of who authored the protocols and why, what their purpose was, the ideas and mindset and techniques discussed therein fit what is going on. That was his point. Fiction or nonfiction, they fit what's going on. So they evidently, there was a plan someone's plan, someone is using those techniques, someone has the same basic idea in mind. That's what matters. And we can agree with that. In their present form, which bears evidence of being their original form, there is no contradiction. The allegation of Jewish authorship seems essential to the consistency of the plan. If these documents were the forgeries which Jewish apologists claim them to be, the forgers would probably have taken pains to make Jewish authorship so clear that their anti-Semitic purpose could easily have been detected. But only twice is the term Jew used in them. After one has read much further than the average reader usually cares to go into such matters, one comes upon the plans for the establishment of the world autocrat, and only then is it made clear of what lineage he is to be. But all through the documents there is left no doubt as to the people against whom the plan is aimed. It is not aimed against aristocracy as such. It is not aimed against capital as such. It is not aimed against government as such. Very definite provisions are made for the enlistment of aristocracy, capital, and government for the execution of the plan. It is aimed against the people of the world who are called Gentiles. It is the frequent mention of Gentiles that really decides the purpose of the documents. Anti-Gentilism is installing a Jewish autocracy to preside over a world that is 99.9% Gentiles. It is the frequent mention of Gentiles that really decides the purpose of the documents. That's another key line. Most of the destructive type of liberal plans aim at the enlistment of the people as helpers. This plan aims at the degeneration of the people in order that they may be reduced to confusion of mind and thus manipulated. Popular movements of a liberal kind are to be encouraged. All the disruptive philosophies in religion, economics, politics, and domestic life are to be sown and watered for the purpose of so disintegrating social solidarity that a definite plan, herein set forth, may be put through without notice, and the people then molded to it when the fallacy of these philosophies is shown. The formula of speech is not, "We Jews will do this," but "the Gentiles will be made to think and do these things." Let's read some of this slowly again, just to ponder it. Most of the destructive type of liberal in quotes, liberal plans aim at the enlistment of the people as helpers. This plan aims at the degeneration of the people in order that they may be reduced to confusion of mind and thus manipulated. Popular movements of a liberal kind are to be encouraged. All the disruptive philosophies in religion, economics, politics, and domestic life are to be sown and watered for the purpose of so disintegrating social solidarity that a definite plan herein set forth may be put through without notice, and the people then molded to it when the fallacy of these philosophies is shown. So they condition us, they groom us for their master plan by breaking us down as a society, by introducing philosophies and beliefs and ideas and practices they know to be false, that is, to be bad and destructive inherently. Is there any word but evil for Jews? But that's moralizing, and where moralizing will not make biology go away, and biology is that subspecies compete for space and dominance until one utterly vanquishes the other. Drives it out, destroys it, genocides it, whatever you want to say. That's what is actually going on here by nature, which is the ultimate way of looking at things. It needn't be a question of Jewish motivations, because this motivation is found in all subspecies in nature. We can moralize it, which is to paint it with our view, but that doesn't change the underlying reality of it. It doesn't make it go away. You're not going to change Jews from being evil. They're going to keep doing what it is in their nature, and indeed all of nature's nature, to do. even if that seems a little circular. The formula of speech is not, we Jews will do this, but the Gentiles will be made to think and do these things. With the exception of a few instances in the closing protocols, the only distinctive racial term used is Gentiles. So that suggests Jews don't make a distinction between Gentiles. They're all idiot animals to be manipulated for Jewish purposes. To illustrate, the first indication of this kind comes in the first protocol in this way, :" The great qualities of the people, honesty and frankness, are essentially vices in politics, because they dethrone more surely and more certainly than does the strongest enemy. These qualities are attributes of Gentile rule. We certainly must not be guided by them. So they're against honesty in politics. Again, quote, we will force up wages, which, however, will be of no benefit to the workers, for we are at the same time will cause a great rise in the prices of prime necessities, pretending that this is due to the decline of agriculture and of cattle raising. We will also artfully and deeply undermine the sources of production by instilling in the workmen ideas of anarchy and encourage them in the use of alcohol, at the same time take measures to drive all the intellectual forces of the Gentiles from the land. I mean, what can you say? What can you append to that to describe what these people are want to do? Remember what Lenin said, we'll grind the bourgeois between the millstones of progressive taxation and inflation. So they're, on one hand, diluting the power of the currency by controlling the Fed and printing counterfeit money, what effect amounts to counterfeit money, even though it's legal. And they're also increasing tax rates, so they're taking away the purchasing power of the goyim on the working treadmill. And they're sucking that money into their own pockets. Now, the article says in parentheses next, a forger with anti-Semitic malice might have written this any time within the last 5 years, but these words were in print at least 14 years ago, according to British evidence, a copy having been in the British Museum since 1906, and they were circulated in Russia a number of years prior. The above point continues that the true situation shall not be noticed by the Gentiles prematurely. We will mask it by a pretended effort to serve the working classes and promote great economic principles for which an active propaganda will be carried on through our economic theories. These quotations will illustrate the style of the protocols in making reference to the parties involved. It is we for the writers, and Gentiles for those who are being written about. This is brought out very clearly in the 14th protocol. Now here's a block quote from it. 14th protocol. In this divergence between Gentiles and ourselves and ability to think and reason is to be seen clearly the seal of our election as the chosen people, as higher human beings, in contrast with the Gentiles who have merely instinctive and animal minds. They observe, but they do not foresee. And they invent nothing, except perhaps material things. It is clear from this that nature herself predestined us to rule and guide the world. This, of course, has been the Jewish method of dividing humanity from the earliest times. The world was only Jew and Gentile. All that was not Jew was Gentile. The use of the word Jew in the protocol may be illustrated by this passage in the 8th section. For the time being, until it will be safe to give responsible government positions to our brother Jews, we shall entrust them to people whose past and whose characters are such that there is an abyss between them and the people. This is the practice known as using Gentile fronts, which is extensively practiced in the financial world today in order to cover up the evidences of Jewish control. How much progress has been made since these words were written is indicated by the occurrence at the San Francisco Convention when the name of Judge Brandeis was proposed for president. That's the Jew who went on to be appointed, I believe, by FDR to head the Supreme Court. It is reasonably to be expected that the public mind will be made more and more familiar with the idea of Jewish occupancy, which will really be a short step from the present degree of influence which the Jews exercise. Again, they're saying this 100 years ago, and now today there's like 3 Jews on the Supreme Court. and the others are just their tools. Is what they're saying is, even if we don't have many positions at present, we are the ones who influence everything. We are the ones who dominated the discussions at Versailles after the Great War. We're the ones who dragged America into the war in exchange for the presence of the promise of Palestine. We already control things, but more and more as time moves on, we'll be taking a front and center position rather than a background advisor, a power behind the throne position of the highest office in the government. There is no function of the American presidency in which the Jews have not already secretly assisted in a very important degree. Actual occupancy of the office is not necessary to enhance their power, but to promote certain things which parallel very closely the plans outlined in the protocols now before us. Another point which the reader of the protocols will notice is that the tone of exhortation is entirely absent from the documents. They are not propaganda. They are not efforts to stimulate the ambitions or activity of those to whom they are addressed. They are as cool as a legal paper and as matter of fact as a table of statistics. There is none of the let us rise, my brothers, stuff about them. There is no down with the Gentiles hysteria. These protocols, if indeed they are made by Jews and confided to Jews, or if they do contain certain principles of a Jewish world program, were certainly not intended for the firebrands, but for the carefully prepared and tested initiates of the higher groups. Jewish apologists have asked, is it conceivable that if there were such a program on the part of the Jews, they would reduce it to writing and publish it? But there is no evidence that these protocols were ever uttered otherwise than in spoken words by those who put them forth. The protocols as we have them are apparently the notes of lectures which were made by someone who heard them. Some of them are lengthy, some of them are brief. The assertion which has always been made in connection with the protocols since they have become known is that they are the notes of lectures delivered to Jewish students, presumably somewhere in France or Switzerland. The attempt to make them appear to be of Russian origin is absolutely forestalled by the point of view, the reference to the times, and certain grammatical indications. The tone certainly fits the supposition that they were originally lectures given to students, for their purpose is clearly not to get a program accepted, but to give information concerning a program which is represented as being already in the process of fulfillment. There is no invitation to join forces or to offer opinions. Indeed, it is specifically announced that neither discussion nor opinions are desired. Quote, while preaching liberalism to Gentiles, we shall hold our own people and our own agents in unquestioning obedience. And another quote, the scheme of administration must emanate from a single brain. Therefore, we may know the plan of action, but we must not discuss it, lest we destroy its unique character. The inspired work of our leader, therefore, must not be thrown before a crowd to be torn to pieces, or even before a limited group. Moreover, taking the protocols at their face value, it is evident that the program outlined in these lecture notes, was not a new one at the time the lectures were given. So the program that they're talking about, whoever it was is taking notes on, is not a new program. There is no evidence of its being a recent arrangement. There is almost the tone of a tradition or a religion in it all, as if it had been handed down from generation to generation through the medium of specially trusted and initiated men. There is no note of new discovery or fresh enthusiasm in it, but the certitude and calmness of facts long known and policies long confirmed by experiment. This point of the age of the program is touched upon at least twice in the protocols themselves. In the first protocol, this paragraph occurs. Let me read that again and try to intone it a little bit better. This point of the age of the program is touched upon at least twice in the protocols themselves. So when you're trying to get a clue, like, okay, where did this come from? It appears to be someone lecturing people, but he's not exhorting them. He's not trying to gain them. He doesn't want to hear their opinions, say, this is how it is. And clearly there's a long provenance. There's a long backstory. There's a long history. There's a long tradition here. Apparently it's been passed down by certain selected, initiated people, this plan for world subjugation, and they're presenting it to some new group that they're obviously initiating. And someone there is taking notes on it. who exactly we don't know, where exactly we don't know, but the age of it. In the first protocol, this paragraph occurs, quote, "Already in ancient times, we were the first to shout the words, liberty, equality, fraternity among the people. These words have been repeated many times by unconscious pole parrots, flocking from all sides to this bait, with which they have ruined the prosperity of the world and true personal freedom. The presumably clever and intellectual Gentiles did not understand the symbolism of the uttered words, did not observe their contradiction in meaning, did not notice that in nature there is no equality." The other reference to the program's finality is found in the 13th protocol. Quote, "Questions of policy, however, are permitted to no one except those who have originated the policy and have directed it for many centuries." Can this be a reference to a secret Jewish Sanhedrin self-perpetuating within a certain Jewish caste from generation to generation? Again, it must be said that the originators and directors here referred to cannot be at present any ruling caste, for all that the program contemplates is directly opposed to the interest of such a caste. It cannot refer to any national aristocratic group like the Junkers of Germany, for the methods which are proposed are the very ones which would render powerless such a group. It cannot refer to any but a people who have no government, who have everything to gain and nothing to lose, and who can keep themselves intact amid a crumbling world. There is only one group that answers that description. Again, a reading of the protocols makes it clear that the speaker himself was not seeking for honor. There is a complete absence of personal ambition throughout the document. All plans and purposes and expectations are merged in the future of Israel, which future, it would seem, can only be secured by the subtle breaking down of certain world ideas held by the Gentiles. The protocols speak of what has been done, what was being done at the time the words were given, and what remained to be done. Nothing like them in completeness of detail, in breadth of plan, and in deep grasp of the hidden springs of human action has ever been known. They are verily terrible in their mastery of the secrets of life, equally terrible in their consciousness of that mastery. Truly, they would merit the opinion which Jews have recently cast upon them, that they were the work of an inspired madman, were it not that what is written in the protocols in words is also written upon the life of today in deeds and tendencies. They fit. What's going on? The criticisms which these protocols pass upon the Gentiles for their stupidity are just. It is impossible to disagree with a single item in the protocol's description of Gentile mentality and veniality. Even the most astute of the Gentile thinkers have been fooled into receiving as the notions of progress what has only been insinuated into the common human mind by the most insidious systems of propaganda. It is true that here and there a thinker has arisen to say that science, so-called, was not science at all. It is true that here and there a thinker has arisen to say that the so-called economic laws, both of conservatives and radicals, were not laws at all, but artificial inventions. It is true that occasionally a keen observer has asserted that the recent debauch of luxury and extravagance was due not to the natural impulses of the people at all, but was systematically stimulated, foisted upon them by design. It is, and my God, if they're saying that in 1920, imagine what they would say today. It is true that a few have discerned that more than half of what passes for public opinion is mere hired applause and booing and has never impressed the public mind. But even with these clues here and there, for the most part, disregarded, there has never been enough continuity and collaboration between those who were awake to follow all the clues to their source. The chief explanation of the hold which the protocols have had on many of the leading statesmen of the world for several decades is that they explain whence all these false influences come and what their purpose is. They give a clue to the modern maze. The protocols give a clue to the modern maze. It is now time for the people to know. And whether the protocols are judged as proving anything concerning the Jews or not, they constitute an education in the way the masses are turned about like sheep by influences that which they do not understand. It is almost certain that once the principles of the protocols are known widely and understood by the people, the criticism which they now rightly make of the Gentile mind will no longer hold good. And I fear that was far, far, far too sanguine of, and underestimating the sheepliness of the goyish people, who aren't interested in the truth even when it's fed to them directly. They turn away and go for the candy every time. It is the purpose of future articles in this series to study these documents and to answer out of their contents all the questions that may arise concerning them. Before that work is begun, one question should be answered. Is there likelihood of the program of the protocols being carried through to success? The program is successful already. In many of its important phases, it is already a reality. This is 100 years ago again. But this need not cause alarm, for the chief weapon to be used against such a program, both in its completed and uncompleted part, is clear publicity. Let the people know. Arousing the people, alarming the people, appealing to the passions of the people, is the method of the plan outlined in the protocols. The antidote is merely enlightening the people. And this really is the source, although elsewhere you find it as the source in direct, overt words, of the idea that exposing the Jews is all that is needed to defeat them, as though they were some kind of mildew or something. Expose them to light and sunlight and you clear up the problem. But it turns out that's not enough. At least we don't think so. We are spreading the enlightenment about the Jews for 100 years, and the internet has helped us greatly, but they still remain a problem, and they're still able to technically, as a technical matter, prevent whites from organizing. The best example we can use in the recent years is Golden Dawn attaining 7% of the vote in Greece as a sort of new Nazi party for a nationalist Greece, and then having all their leaders thrown in jail because one of their members committed a murder. So it's always easy to find some technical means, suppress people, and that's the part that has to be overcome. We can have all the enlightenment we want, but it must lead to organization and executive action for it to have any effect. That is the only purpose of these articles. The last paragraph here of this article introducing the protocols. Enlightenment dispels prejudice. I would say to know the Jews is to hate them and to fight them. To want to fight them, to want to look around to find a group of men who already know what you have just learned and want to fight them, and to form with them, to join with them in forming a team white that can take on Team Jew. It is as desirable to dispel the prejudice of the Jew as of the Gentile. Jewish writers too frequently assume that the prejudice is all on one side. Again, this is an unpardonable naivete. They don't assume anything. That's how they act. They're trying to deceive you. He's just got done talking about the protocols and how they're all, we're deceiving the goyim. They're a bunch of idiots. They aren't capable of paying attention to anything. They're lying, for Christ's freaking sake. They know what they're doing. They know the guilt is, in fact, entirely on their side. It's just a public ploy blaming us for everything and pretending not to understand that the reaction they receive in the world in every single time and place is due to their behavior rather than to any notional prejudice. It's not prejudice to respond to people the way that their behavior shows you ought to respond to them. I mean, if they stink, it really is. Like, if you stink, then you blame someone else for noticing that you stink. Or you murder people, and then you blame people for crossing the street when your kind walks down it. I mean, it's ridiculous. Jewish writers too frequently assume that the prejudice is all in one side. They don't assume that. They are lying about that. The protocols themselves ought to have the widest circulation among the Jewish people in order that they may check those things which are bringing suspicion upon their name. See, this is the thing. What was different 100 years ago was Jews hadn't fully assimilated into Goy society. They were naming their kids Llewellyn and Murray and such in order to fully assimilate into WASP society socially, while of course retaining their own nationalistic, groupish, clannish bent that they might have the power, but also the formal position, not just the money power, but the formal position, being appointed the dean of Harvard, being admitted in record numbers to all the Ivy League schools, having their own kind appointed to the Supreme Court. They were still working their way toward that. And so at that point, if they were acting too shtetly or too Eastern European Yiddy rather than Ashkenazi German respectable Jewy, they might be brought to task even at that late of a date. But soon they were to exceed a near complete power in the United States in a couple more decades. Anyway, that will conclude Chapter 10. I want to thank you for listening to me today and being with us, and we'll be back with you real, real soon with more from the International Jew, unabridged version. Thanks for listening. Talk to you later.